I'm Jim Leach from WMAY Radio, along with my fellow panelists Bernie Schoenberg from the State Journal Register and Daisy Contreras from WUIS NPR Illinois. We are here joined by five of the six Democratic candidates for governor of Illinois. Unfortunately, Chris Kennedy is unable to be here with us this evening. He sustained a back injury earlier today, and on doctor's orders, he is unable to travel here to Springfield. We regret that he cannot be here and wish him the best for a speedy recovery. Our other candidates are, in fact, here, though, and will now introduce themselves via a 60-second opening statement, the order of which was determined by random draw. The first 60-second statement goes to J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I've been listening to hardworking people all across the state of Illinois, especially those here in central Illinois, and how neglected you all have been. Specifically, I've listened to the students and faculty here at UIS, to parishioners at Union Baptist Church, to the farmers at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, and to early childhood educators in Champaign. And I've listened to the devastation that Bruce Rauner has wrought upon families and communities. I believe we need to focus on the kitchen table issues that are really important to families across the state of Illinois. And that means creating jobs, it means lowering the cost of health care, making college more affordable, and providing a quality education for every single child. Now, I've put forward real plans for addressing those issues. I've tried to make a difference all across the state of Illinois. It's why I'm running for governor. And I want to assure you that I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I'm going to beat Bruce Rauner, and we're going to put Springfield back on the side of working families.
Thank you. Our next opening statement from T.O. Hardiman.
Hi, my name is T.O. Hardiman, Democratic candidate for governor here in the state of Illinois. I ran for governor back in 2014 and secured close to 28% of the state vote, winning 30 counties downstate. I would like to salute my running mate. Her name is Patricia Avery. She's a former president of the NAACP in Champaign-Urbana and a former Champaign County commissioner. I'm running for governor to really step up and speak up for the working class and poor people throughout Illinois. We have a 2020 plan which represents the perfect vision to move the state of Illinois forward. I'm glad to be here, and I want to thank you all for allowing us to participate in this governor's forum. And in our 2020 plan, it includes supporting the veterans, the farmers, the children, people with disabilities, the progressive tax, the financial transaction tax, and make sure we get the state back on track by balancing the state budget and turning the state back over to the 99.9% of the working class, middle class, and poor people here in Illinois. And I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for listening.
Our next opening statement now from Bob Diver.
Thank you. I'm Bob Diver. I'm the only downstate candidate that is running. I feel very strong that Illinois should be represented by all the counties. Most candidates that run for governor are from Cook County. I'm the first candidate in 20 years to run as a Democrat for governor of this state. I have served in all levels of local government. I have 20 years' experience. I've won over 15 elections and more experience than any other candidate in this race. I've been a city councilman. I've served as a township supervisor. I've served on the county board, and I've served as a countywide elected official, as well as being president of the superintendents of the state of Illinois. I'm proud of my record, and I've said this, that I'm a firm believer that Illinois can move forward once we get our fiscal house in order. We have to pay all of our unpaid bills before we can take the next step. In institutions such as this, we need to reinstate funding for higher ed rather than waste money on interest as we did last year, over $1 billion.
Thank you. Now to Daniel Biss.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here at UIS this evening and an honor to participate in this discussion. My name is Daniel Biss. I'm state senator in the 9th District. I live up in Evanston with my wife, Karen, our two kids, Elliot and Theodore, who are in 2nd and 4th grade in our neighborhood public school. And this race is personal for me. We live a middle-class life. We see a state government that's less and less on the side of families like ours and more on the side of a few people born with tremendous wealth, born with tremendous connections. My wife, Karen, and I, we spend time trying to figure out how to make sure our kids have access to health care, how to pay our property tax bills that add up to more than 10% of our annual income. These are the challenges faced by most Illinois families on an annual, monthly, weekly basis, and they're the challenges that our state government has lost touch with. It's time for us to have a state government that's finally working for ordinary families who have seen a system leave them further and further behind. I'm Daniel Biss. I'm running for governor to give us that state government. I look forward to tonight's conversation about these topics.
And our final opening statement comes from Robert Marshall.
Well, good evening. Thank you for having me here. My name is Dr. Robert Marshall. I'm a physician. Vietnam veteran. I live in one of the suburbs of Chicago, Burr Ridge. I work at Oak Forest Hospital, one of the Cook County hospitals. We take care of the sickest of the sick and the poorest of the poor. Illinois has two gigantic problems, and any candidate must address these problems. Number one, obviously, is the economic mess that we are in. The establishment in this state caused this problem, both parties, actually, but mainly the Democratic Party. And I have nothing to do with the establishment. Mr. Madigan, I have no relationship. Some of these people I've never even met. So I'm an anti-establishment candidate, and that's one of the things you have to have, I believe, in order to solve this problem. The second problem is the extreme violence that's occurring in Chicago, 4,000 shootings a year, 800 murders. That's the second problem. Any candidate must address that problem, and I have a solution for that, too.
Candidates, thank you. We are coming to you live from the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield, and we'd like to thank them for their hospitality this evening. We will now put questions to our candidates in rotating order. The first question will be posed by Bernie Schoenberg of the State Journal Register and will be answered first by J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. Mr. Pritzker, given the recent school shooting in Parkland, Florida, similar incidents in other places, what can or should Illinois do to prevent such violence?
Let me begin by saying that I cannot imagine the grief that the parents are going through of those 17 children who were killed. I drop my own children off, they're teenagers, drop them off at school, and to the idea that I may never see them again, I cannot imagine or fathom. I believe that here in the state of Illinois, we need to ban assault weapons. We need to make sure we ban bump stocks and high-capacity magazines. Those are things that will help us with these mass shooting incidents. But we have a challenge in Illinois that's beyond that, and that's that Bruce Rauner, over the last 3 years, hasn't funded our state's budget. He's been unwilling to stand up and fund the human services that people rely upon, and without that, people become desperate. And with the illegal guns that are on the street and desperation that's overtaken so many people, it's a bad mix. And that's why we've seen so much gun violence increasing across the state of Illinois. We need to pass a gun shop licensing bill for sure, but we also need to ban those other items.
Thank you. T.O. Hardeman?
Yes, I'm T.O. Hardeman. Once again, I'm also known as Mr. Ceasefire. I have a lot of experience in the area of reducing gun violence. As your governor, what I plan to do, part of our 2020 plan, is to hire veterans to work in the schools to make sure we detect and prevent incidents from happening before they actually happen. I have a proven track record of reducing gun violence in Chicago anywhere from 30% to 80% in some communities. But we also plan to work closely with the ATF and the state police to intercept the illegal gun trafficking. We support the Second Amendment. I support concealed carry, but I do not support people stockpiling semi-automatic weapons. And the reason I support concealed carry because there's no data in Illinois that dictates the fact that legal gun owners are part of the gun violence problem here in Illinois. So we must support the Second Amendment in that regard. But at the same time, I'm against the stock, you know, anything when it comes down to semi-automatic weapons. We have to change the culture of violence in Illinois and address the issue as a public health epidemic. I currently teach as a professor in the field of restorative justice as well, so I'm interested in healing the entire community. Okay.
Now to Bob Diver.
Well, as a superintendent that deals with 13 large districts in the state, I want to tell you first and foremost, this is a concern of mine every morning when I get up. And it's a dreadful fact if you ever would have to experience it because of the devastation. So what I've done for 10 years is I've worked with my districts through crisis management procedures. And one of the most important things that every school can do to help prevent this is put polyethylene film on all the entrances of all their vestibules as you come into a school so the windows can't be shot out. The second thing is that we've made entrances to most all schools with buzzard access, that there's not open access to campuses. But first and foremost, those procedures that led to the number of students that were shot in Florida on evacuation procedures. I had a meeting this past week with local fire marshals about when a fire alarm is pulled, maybe we don't exit immediately, but we stop, look, and listen to make sure that we're not victims as we enter those hallways. Small things like that save lives. Seconds save lives, and those are the procedures we need to put in place.
Senator Biss?
Thank you. The news out of Florida was beyond horrifying, and our hearts are all sick. And the truth is there are shootings in the state of Illinois every single day, each one of which should make our hearts sick. We need to do three things here in Illinois. Number one, we need a sustainable budget that funds social services like mental health, anti-violence programs, and substance abuse treatment on a sustainable basis. Bruce Rauner destroyed that. I'm going to fix that. Number two, we need to invest in job creation in neighborhoods across the state that have been victimized by disinvestment and have seen economic opportunity leave. And number three, we need sane, common-sense gun safety legislation, like licensing gun dealers, banning high-capacity magazines and bump stocks and more. We need to bring people together and stop the gridlock on this issue. But that won't be enough either, because we need to look at our neighboring states. And we need a governor who's going to be a leader on national policy and on working with neighboring states to make sure that we have good policies in Washington and Wisconsin and Indiana and around so that guns can't flow into Illinois from elsewhere and be used to commit violent crimes.
And Dr. Marshall.
Well, in general, I'm against any changes in gun laws. It's equivalent to trying to sweep the tide back with a broom. I think we should spend more time and energy in identifying the people who are the mass killers. In many cases, if you examine these cases, there were high suspicions about the mass killer, mental illnesses, the trouble at school, expulsions. Let's spend more time identifying the possible shooter instead of infringing upon our rights to own weapons.
Our next question will come from Daisy Contreras. It will be directed first to T.O. Hardiman.
Mr. Hardiman, President Donald Trump is in the middle of a four-year term, and his administration oversees many programs important to Illinois. How can you, as a Democrat, work with that administration, and is it okay to be highly critical of the president in public if you are going to lead Illinois and seek federal assistance in doing so?
Well, make no mistakes. I'm running to become the first black governor of the state of Illinois. I don't have a problem criticizing Donald Trump in public anywhere at any time. Donald Trump is a failed leader in our union, in my opinion anyway. And the thing about it, he's made comments about all kinds of people's nationalities, criticizing people with disabilities, criticizing, you know, people that, you know, are seen. No human being should be deemed as illegal anyway. He's criticizing illegal, you know, people that are here in the United States. So I would have to work with some of the congressional leaders and U.S. senators to the best of my ability to access resources to bring them here to Illinois. We would have to work in spite of Donald Trump. But I do not support Donald Trump under no circumstances. And I'm never going to stand up for a president that's not standing up for the poor and working class people. Right now, he's trying to take people's food stamps from them. Some people need their public assistance. Some people really do need their public assistance. And who is he to play dictator here in the United States and take away what people really need? So to answer your question directly, I have no problem criticizing the president. You see that already, everybody. All right.
Just not a Bob Diver.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I for one, would work with President Trump. I'd invite him to the state of Illinois. I'd invite him to come here and bring resources that he promised to all the residents of the state that voted for him. I think he should live up to those promises. I don't think, as governor, you should shut the door on any president, whether you like him or whether you don't. That's the type of governor I would be, because that's the type of elected official I am, is that I've always been willing to sit down at the table with whoever it is and talk about the issues and talk about how you compromise. Because when you have this great polarity that you see going on in this country and in this state, what you get is nothing. And as a governor, I plan to bring you a great deal. I plan to bring you better infrastructure that President Trump has promised. I plan to bring you programs that have been promised by his administration. But I'll tell you something that I will not bring this state, and that's right to work. This state will remain a strong union state, and that will be where President Trump and I will draw a line in the sand. Thank you.
Now to Daniel Biss.
State governments are the first line of defense against a dangerous, reckless federal administration. The Trump administration threatens the core values that we have held as a nation since our founding, the values of pluralism, the values of inclusion, the values of equality, the values of justice. And worse, he threatens the core of our democracy. And so there are many ways in which states across the country are leading the resistance, and Illinois has been silent because Bruce Rauner won't step up to the plate. On issues around women's rights, LGBTQ rights, immigrants and refugees' rights, environmental policy, and health care, we have been trying in Springfield to stand up and resist Donald Trump, And because of Bruce Rauner, we've only gotten about an eighth of the way there. We need states to be strong lines of resistance. And yes, we have to work with everyone, but we also have to acknowledge that what Donald Trump respects is strength. And we have to stand up for our values and stand up for what we believe in, and that's the way to move him in our direction, not to kowtow to his racist views.
Dr. Marshall?
Here, friends. Mr. Trump listens to two things, money and power. Now, we don't have the money, but he understands political power. There's an election coming up, 8 months. Kick his butt. That's what we need to do. Kick the Republicans out of Congress, change Congress to a blue Congress, at least on the state house, the representative side. And if we can do it in the Senate, that would be good. But there's a good chance we could flip the House to Democratic, and that will get his attention. First of all, there'll be more investigations in what he's done with Russia. There's a possibility he might be impeached, and that's what he'll listen to, and that's about the only thing. So this November, tell him by voting right down here. You have a Republican representative. Vote them out of power. Send that message to Mr. Trump.
And finally to J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. Well, Donald Trump is a racist and a xenophobe and a misogynist and a homophobe. And I've stood up to him for 2 years now. In fact, there's no candidate running for governor that's done more to fight against Donald Trump, to knock on doors across multiple states, to phone bank, to raise money, to give money, to try to defeat him in 2016. And I haven't stopped standing up to him. Unfortunately, we have a governor here in the state of Illinois who simply has been silent in the face of so many offenses against the people of Illinois. Donald Trump wants to take away 1 million people's health care in the state. Bruce Rauner has been silent. Donald Trump has instilled fear in our state's immigrant population, whether they're undocumented or otherwise. Bruce Rauner has been utterly silent. We need a governor who's actually going to stand up to Donald Trump, and I'm that governor.
Candidates, our next question goes first to Bob Diber. We've all heard a lot this week about the problems at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy, but it's just one of a number of state facilities that are aging, in some cases crumbling, and will need a lot of work. What is your plan for taking care of all of those facilities and trying to make sure that a situation like this is not repeated?
Well, first and foremost, you know, to do that, you have to have a budget. And I think where this governor failed is for 2 years there were no budgets, okay? And secondly, you have to be accountable. And my administration, those who will work in it, will be accountable for what takes place in all of our state facilities. I think lack of inspection in prior years led to the catastrophic facts that we are presented with today. You know, bacteria in water and poor infrastructure in our buildings need to have ongoing improvements. And if you don't have an improvement plan for a facility, this is what you wind up with. And it's good to push the can down the road. It's good to eliminate things in your budget and to try to cut taxes. But the end result is you have people die as a result of it, and that's what happened at the Quincy Veterans Home. Who's to fault to blame? The administration is, because we did not stay up on top of it. So let's just face up to it. We got to do a better job.
Daniel Biss?
What happened in the Quincy Veterans Home is absolutely a moral outrage. Our state failed the people we are most responsible for serving, and some of them died as a result. And then Bruce Rauner basically just tried to ignore the problem until it became a major news issue, and then, this is incredible, but I swear it's true, and then said that he wouldn't have done anything differently. That he wouldn't have done anything differently. So what do you have to do differently, Governor? Two things, investment and accountability. We need to have a state budget that actually invests properly in the guts of state government in a way that makes it work, that has adequate resources to do the job that our state has a moral responsibility to do. And then we have to have robust accountability systems in place. So instead of again and again and again sweeping problems under the rug, the second we see something, it's brought to light, we have accountability, we own up to it, and we immediately build a plan to fix it. That's what I'm going to do as governor.
Robert Marshall.
All right, well, I'm the only veteran here. I'm a Vietnam veteran. So I really was affected by this tragedy at the VA hospital. I'm a physician, so I'm a little bit knowledgeable. But we're talking about money here now. And that's what they need there to solve their problems. I have a three-phase program to solve the problem in this state, the financial problems. I'll discuss number two, the second part. That's getting new money, extra money, not income taxes, but legalizing marijuana. You could grow it down here. It's a gigantic multi-billion dollar cash crop, and then you put taxes on it, and that generates new money. Number two, casino gambling for Chicago. It's 55 million well-heeled visitors who come to Chicago, and that's a big source of money. The other source is putting tolls on the entrances to the interstate highways coming into the state. The out-of-staters would pay. So that's your second phase of my solutions. That's getting new sources of money.
Time is up. Thank you, J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. Our veterans deserve our gratitude. They deserve our respect and dignity. I'm proud that my father, my grandfather, my brother-in-law, all Navy veterans, my cousin, an Army veteran, I believe that we need to stand up for our veterans. What Bruce Rauner did in Quincy, frankly, is fatal mismanagement, something that he's done in other departments of the state of Illinois. I think we need a governor who doesn't wait till it's too little, too late, who stands up and does the right thing. Here, that means moving those veterans, giving them temporary quarters, rebuilding that facility in Quincy, and moving to build the facility in Chicago that was halted by Bruce Rauner just because of politics. Two-thirds of the money would come from the federal government, only one-third from the state government. We can do this. We must do this to secure our veterans and make it safe for them.
And finally, T.O. Hardiman.
Yes, just like J.B., my grandfather, my uncles, my son is a member of the National Guard right now, so I support veterans all the way. But when I become governor, I do support House Bill 453, which is a financial transaction tax, and we would tax the Chicago Board of Options, Chicago Board of Trade, and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That tax is projected to bring in $3 billion of new revenue, and we would set aside at least $50 million to rebuild the infrastructure of some of these state facilities to make sure we protect our veterans and everybody in the state. Bruce Rauner, if you can recall, when he ran for governor, there were some issues at some nursing homes that he used to oversee, but he kind of stepped back saying he had nothing to do with it. But two senior citizens lost their lives, and an 11-year-old young man lost his life. So as a governor, we must lead, we must detect and prevent these type of incidents from occurring in the state. And as your governor, that's my whole life's work, catching things on the front end and making it right for the state, for the people in the state of Illinois. Thank you.
Candidates, thank you. Our next question comes from Bernie Schoenberg at the State Journal Register, and it will go first to Senator Daniel Biss.
Senator Biss, House Speaker Michael Madigan is also chairman of the Democratic Party of Illinois. Due to issues including allegations of harassment by two people recently removed from Democratic Party work, some have called for Madigan to step down from one or both positions. Where do you stand on this and why?
I've called for Mike Madigan to step down as chairman of the Democratic Party of Illinois. I'm a Democratic elected official. He's lost my faith in the ability to lead this party, and I think there's real questions been called about his leadership of the House as well. And frankly, this is not so much news. He's been there too long. Mike Madigan's too powerful. He's been a problem in the state of Illinois for quite some time, and he's been a problem for the Democratic Party for quite some time. And we have an important choice to make in this election. I have a record of independence of Mike Madigan, but J.B. Pritzker is Mike Madigan's candidate in this race. And I don't think that's right for the Democratic Party. I don't think that's right to beat Bruce Rauner. I don't think it's right for the state of Illinois. It took J.B. Pritzker a week to get permission from Mike Madigan to even name him in talking about this sexual harassment cover-up. We need someone with independence, and I'm that candidate.
Dr. Marshall?
Well, you're right about Mr. Pritzker. If Mr. Pritzker is elected, Mr. Madigan will have complete dictatorial power in this state. He'll control everything. And I think he should resign from both his positions, actually, because of what he's done or not done in the past month. But I have a plan that will really, really solve the problem of Madigan. My plan is to divide Illinois up into three new states, brand new states. And you will have your own state down here. Everything south of Route 80 is your new state. You have your own governor, your own constitution, two senators, two electorals in the Electoral College, and Mike Madigan will go back to Chicago. Think about it. he will go back to Chicago. That's his home. And you will be rid of him for life. Think about it. Thank you.
J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. It's utterly ridiculous what Dan Biss has said. This is a state representative who got elected with Mike Madigan's help, who accepted tens of thousands of dollars from him, who ran Mike Madigan's super PAC, and who's accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars from Springfield insiders, bankers, and lobbyists. So let me get to the question here, which is, I believe that we need to stand up for the women who bravely stepped forward with their stories, that we need to make sure there is an independent, fully independent investigation, something that is totally independent of Speaker Madigan's operation and Speaker Madigan himself. We need to make sure that we stand up for the women who come forward in workplaces across the state of Illinois and in Juliana Stratton and my administration. There will be a zero-tolerance policy for sexual harassment. I believe that Melinda Bush put forward a bill today to allow staffers in the legislature to file complaints with the Human Rights Commission. They should be allowed to do that, and we should pass that bill.
Tia Hardeman.
Okay, first and foremost, I'll go on the record and say this again. The reason I would like for everybody to consider voting for myself and my running mate, Patricia Avery, because I don't have nothing to do with none of that mess. Okay, I just want to put that out there. So this is the thing. I support term limits. We support term limits because I believe that Mike Madigan, actually, when I'm elected as governor, I believe Mike Madigan may resign, seriously, because he hasn't had to deal with nobody like me in his lifetime. I just want to put that out there. But I'll say this. Mike Madigan is voted into office every year by his constituents. Until the people decide to not vote for Mike Madigan, he's going to be there. I do agree he should step down, but at the same time, term limits is very important because sometimes people become too comfortable in their positions and they overlook a few things out of comfortability. So that's my response to that. I will say this also. In our administration, we will not tolerate any type of sexual harassment. We will take a look at what's going on with all of our departments here in the state and do the right thing and get on top of these issues once again on the front end. That's what it's all about, getting on the front end. That's what I'm trying to drive that message. The front end is always better than coming afterwards.
Time's up. And now, finally, Bob Diver.
All right. Well, let's talk truth to power here. You know, an individual who's Speaker of the House and is Chairman of Party has an exorbitant amount of power, and should one individual, whether it's Mike Madigan or Dan Biss or whoever it is, have that capability? No. Okay? But you know what? The guy was elected to both positions, one by state central committeemen, the other one by members of the House, and he is there. And no matter what Bob Diver says, he's going to be there tomorrow morning. Okay? And he's probably going to be there if I'm elected to become governor. So let's just put, you know, this whole thing in correct perspective. You know, you can say all kinds of bad things about a person, but when you go and sit down across the table with them and you've got to deal with them as a governor, what's going to be the initial perception of you? And therefore, when I become governor, Mike Madigan's going to sit across the table from me, and we're going to get on with business in the state of Illinois, and we're going to put this nonsense aside, because that's what this is. It's political nonsense. There's going to be no independent investigation of this guy. He's not going anywhere.
Your time
so
is
don't
up.
Be fooled.
Candidates, thank you.
Could I get a...
Very briefly, please.
Yeah, I just want to point out that when JB got done attacking me, he said he was going to answer the question, then didn't, because he hasn't gotten permission yet from Madigan to answer that question. But here's the truth. Here's the truth. There's a Pritzker-Madigan wing of the Democratic Party, and there's the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that I'm a part of. And I'll work with anybody. In general elections, I work with Democrats from both wings of the party to move the party forward. And when I'm in office, I work with people from both parties and all wings of all parties to move a progressive agenda forward. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm a lifelong member of the Independent Progressive Party.
Mr. Pritzker, since you were called out by name, would you care to address the question directly as far as whether Speaker Madigan should step down as Speaker or State Party Chair?
The independent investigation that is now going to proceed will determine who the perpetrators are and who is truly responsible, and everybody, and I mean everybody, up and down the line, who is responsible should be held accountable.
We're now turning the questioning over to several students from the University of Illinois, Springfield. We'll have our students come up individually, introduce themselves. The first question will be directed to Dr. Robert Marshall.
Hello, my name is Megan Sweat. I'm a graduate student here, part of the Public Affairs Reporting Program. Tax increment finance districts, or TIF districts, are economically blighted areas where property taxes are essentially frozen for over 20 years, meaning developers don't have to pay increased tax rates. While the idea has its benefits, it's often abused by developers looking for tax loopholes in cities looking for development of any kind. Springfield specifically has 8 TIF districts. My question is, how do you plan to combat TIF abuses in Illinois without scaring away economic development in sincerely blighted areas?
Dr. Marshall.
Well, the whole property tax system is a mess by itself. First of all, we have to stop people from using TIFs to, you know, reclassify areas that really aren't blighted. The concept of what's blighted and what's blighted is blurred. That's the problem. There's two things we need to do about the property tax system. We have to get rid of the assessment situation. Properties should be valued by their purchase price, what you pay for it. And then the other thing about property taxes in general is that they're far too high. I would use the marijuana money to rebate that money directly back to property owners and alleviate some of the high property taxes that way.
J.B. Pritzker.
Well, thank you, Megan, and it's a very important issue because, unfortunately, our schools are underfunded across the state of Illinois, and we need a progressive income tax in the state to help change that, not only to lower local property taxes and increase the amount that the state is stepping up to and lower the burden on local governments, but also because we can protect the middle class and those striving to get to the middle class from tax hikes, in fact, to lower the burden overall for middle class taxpayers. Now, TIF districts need to be sure, whenever any TIF is granted, we need to be sure that all stakeholders are at the table. That includes the residents who are affected by the lowered property taxes on that property and the teachers teaching in that area, whatever that is. That's not been done across the state. And TIF districts are a very important way, certainly for economic development, but they should only be implemented if all the stakeholders are there.
T.O. Hardiman.
Yeah, when it comes down to TIF, what we plan to do is take a look at appointing what you call setting up a task force to kind of look at rehauling the TIF system to a degree, because for far too long, a lot of people have been taking advantage of the TIF funding. So we have to make sure that property taxes are not overassessed, number one, because where I come from is Cook County. Our property taxes are being overassessed on a higher level, and people are losing their properties, you know, all over the place, like in Harvey, Dalton, like Calumet City, different places like that. But in Springfield, I'm pretty sure the same thing is happening to a degree. So what we plan to do is make sure the TIF funding is being used the proper way to help, you know, improve communities. But there should be a separation between homeowners, because we do support a property tax freeze, okay? But there should be a separation from the TIF and the property and taxes when it comes down to developers. Developers should not be able to hide up under the TIF funding to get away with not paying their fair share of taxes. So that's what we would do.
Question on TIF districts now to Bob Diver.
Sure. Well, Megan, you know, let me begin by saying shame on the Tax Increment Financing Board. And what does the governor do about that? The governor appoints qualified people to those commissions that oversees them and makes sure that local and public policy is done right. And that is what's went wrong. Being a local elected official and serving on a county board, I've dealt with TIF districts. I've dealt with enterprise zones, and we need to make sure that in every community in the state where we grant these, that they are being granted properly. And that's not been done. That's why you asked the question. So as an administrator, you've got to make sure that those individuals in your administration are doing their job and that they're seeing that there's not abuse to a system, and that's what I'll do as governor.
Now to Daniel Biss.
Thanks for the question, Megan. Thank you for being here. You know, the TIF system is totally broken. It's become a punchline. It's supposed to be for blighted communities, and yet some of the most booming, gleaming, affluent neighborhoods in the state of Illinois have become declared TIF districts. And so what we need to do is two things. Number one, we need to fix the TIF system itself with actual metrics and actual hard definitions of what blight means and real input from all stakeholders who currently are losing because they're not represented at the table. But then we need a system where TIFs aren't necessary. TIFs are a response to the fact that our tax system is broken and is simply not on the side of most people, whether it's working families or small businesses. And the TIF is a kind of not very effective way to somehow fix that. The way to fix that correctly is to finally ask the wealthy to pay their share, to in so doing allow the state to fund schools properly, to in so doing allow us to bring down property taxes significantly, and then to fix the broken property tax assessment system as well. If you get all that done, you'll find that TIFs are way less necessary.
Our next student question will go first to J.B. Pritzker.
Hello, my name is Aaron Boyd. I'm a sophomore criminology major. Agriculture is a driving force in the Illinois economy, but the economic benefits of pesticides and agricultural business must be balanced with the risks associated with these widespread chemicals and our growing knowledge about the effects of these chemicals. How would you, as governor, seek to regulate or deregulate the pesticide use in agricultural business?
Mr. Pritzker.
Thank you. Well, first, it's important for us to recognize how important agriculture is to the state of Illinois, that it's our biggest export, it's one of our biggest industries. It's important for us to stand up for our ag industry. And while we're doing that, we need to protect the environment. We need to have leaders of the Illinois EPA who are standing up for the regulations that have been put in place and making sure that we're reasonable in asking those farmers to do the right thing. Now, we also need to make sure that at the federal level, we're fighting against what Donald Trump's tried to do, which is to remove all the regulations at EPA. Literally, he is trying to shut down the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So that means here in Illinois, we're going to have to be on guard, putting in regulations that used to be federal regulations, and making sure that we're standing up for the environment so that we're not polluting our waters, which are so important across the state, and particularly up in northern Illinois, with Lake Michigan being a massive fresh water source.
Now to T.O. Hardiman.
Yeah, on behalf of myself and my running mate, Patricia Avery, once again, we definitely support 100% clean energy when it comes down to regulating pesticides here in Illinois. I got a chance to talk to some farmers here in central Illinois, and I heard their views and a lot of their concerns. So as your governor, we'll put a fail-proof plan in place to make sure that pesticides are not a big major problem here in Illinois, because agriculture is one of the major businesses here in our state, and it's the backbone of our state. So we must support our farmers here by providing them with a lot of subsidies and incentives to keep them in business every step of the way. And the way we would fund it is with House Bill 453, again, the financial transaction tax. And when we legalize small amounts of recreational use marijuana, we use some of that tax money also to help the farmers in central Illinois. And so we're pushing for 100% clean energy, though. I want everybody to know that.
Bob Diver?
Well, Aaron, I really appreciate you talking about pesticides, because you may have heard that I'm the only gubernatorial candidate that's called for a ban on dicamba. And dicamba is the most volatile soybean herbicide that's ever been created. And in fact, the regulations to allow farmers again this year to use that seed system have increased. I'm involved in soybean production myself. It's the one thing Illinois is first in. Not only in the United States, but in the entire world, we are first in soybean production. So our pesticides we use and the nature of the crops that we grow in this state make Illinois a leading agricultural state in the world. And it is so important that we do not jeopardize the nature of our products so that we remain first. And that's why I call for a ban on dicamba, because it's going to affect many of you in this room this summer if the acreages of dicamba expand because of the drift of it. And I encourage you to read about it and look at my policy. Thank you.
The question on pesticide use, now to Daniel Biss.
Thanks so much for that question, Aaron. It's an awesome question. I was proud to be endorsed yesterday by the Sierra Club of Illinois in recognition of my years of work on behalf of environmental issues and on behalf of the strong environmental platform we've put together. And what I want to say about this issue is that the choice that you set up is a choice that we've been tricked into accepting as inevitable, the choice between environmental protection on the one hand and agricultural productivity and prosperity on the other. When we talk about agriculture in Springfield, we're too often talking not about what the family farmer needs, but what global agribusiness wants. And so when we've tried to make changes around concentrated animal feeding operations, around pesticides and so forth, those are in the long-term sustainable interests of agriculture, but they're not in the short-term financial interests of the big business. And so we need a governor who understands that distinction and supports agriculture by supporting sustainable environmental policy. That's the governor I'm going to be.
And finally, Dr. Marshall.
Well, the agriculture is a very enormous industry in this state, and we should do everything to promote it. If we legalize marijuana, you could grow it down here, and that'd be an enormous multi-billion dollar cash crop. I support Mr. Diber's plan for outlawing dicamba. That's a good idea. In general, we need a governor who has high values for the environment, and I do. The other thing we do is try to get rid of the person in the White House who doesn't have these values. And we can send him a message next November that we did disapprove of his policies and actually his environmental policies are a big issue. And we can send him a message in November that we disagree with his policies.
We have one more UIS student question, and that will be directed first to T.O. Hardiman.
Good evening. My name is Crystal Terrazas. I am a senior here at UIS, double majoring in legal studies and political science. A few years ago, Mayor Emanuel from Chicago announced the Welcoming City Ordinance, making Chicago a sanctuary city. Illinois has Cook County as the only sanctuary county in the state. What is your stance on sanctuary cities and counties in the state, and what will you do to protect the undocumented immigrants that are living in the rest of the state?
First and foremost, if you were raised in the United States and raised in Illinois, I plan to make sure you stay here, number one. I have a great relationship with, like I said, no human being should be deemed as illegal, but I have a great relationship with people all across, you know, Illinois in that regard. I definitely agree with Illinois being a sanctuary state, and I know what Rahm Emanuel did in Chicago and throughout Cook County, but I plan to meet with people statewide and take a look at making sure all the counties. It's over 100 counties in Illinois, and I plan to make sure all the counties become sanctuary, you know, states, sanctuary-like counties. That's important because people out here, they raised their family here, they need to stay here. Everybody came to America from somewhere other than my ancestors. My ancestors were brought over here on the bottom of slave ships. So I understand the struggle. I understand racism, discrimination. I don't want anybody to take that wrong. I plan to be the governor for everybody. It's about I'm the governor for black, white, Hispanic, Asian, and everybody. But I want to make it crystal clear because this is an issue that continues to come up, and we must protect human beings. So that's what we plan to do when I become your governor.
Bob Diber.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. I've went on record and said that I support the entire state being a sanctuary state. I am not for deportation of parents. I am for keeping families together. I have great concern about beginning to deport parents who have natural-born children on this soil because I do not want Illinois to become a state of orphans, because without any question, parents will leave their children here, and us as Illinois residents will figure out how we are going to care for these children. Being a public school official, I've worked immensely in trying to help immigrants enroll in our school system. I come from a county that's got a high number of Hispanic immigrants. In fact, the county that's got the most south of I-80. The first and foremost thing that every family wants is they want their child to be able to enroll in school. And therefore, as governor, I will do something that was taken away in this last administration. I will reinstate funding for bilingual support systems in our schools throughout the state of Illinois to help those families enroll their children.
Senator Biss.
Thank you for that question. There's not a more profound moral challenge facing America right now. The attack by this administration on immigrants, regardless of documentation status, right? They're more focused on skin color than documentation status. The attack on immigrants is profoundly un-American. So I was proud to be a co-sponsor of the Trust Act that partially addressed this on the state level. I'm glad that bill is law. That bill got watered down. There's a lot more to be done to strengthen it, for example, around protecting people who are victims of crimes regardless of documentation status and making sure that state resources will never be used to cooperate with the federal government in producing a Muslim registry. But I especially like the way you asked the question. It's not only about state laws. It's about municipal policies. And I've fought in my home community of Evanston to have strong welcoming policies. And when I'm governor, I'll be showing up at city council and village board meetings across the state of Illinois, standing up and saying, we all need to pass the strongest possible welcoming policies so that Illinois can be a beacon for people across the country that makes our lives richer and it makes our state stronger.
Dr. Marshall.
Yeah, I think we're all five agreed on this, that Illinois should be a sanctuary state. Down here for the farming industry, this is very important. In medicine, I'm a physician. We are very dependent on immigrants for all parts of medicine, technical, administrative, physicians. There's a large number of immigrants throughout the entire medical community. So I think being a sanctuary state would be a good thing. And by the way, once again, if we could send a message to that fellow in the White House who is 100% opposed to this, that's another way we could promote this issue. Send him a message next November and flip the state blue, or flip the U.S. House blue anyway.
And finally to J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. Well, Crystal, it's a great question, and I want to assure you that as governor, I will stand up for the sanctuary status of cities and counties in the state of Illinois, as I have stood up for the Trust Act and believe that we need to enforce it. You know, as the candidate who has stood up to Donald Trump the strongest, I have been proud to have the support of Congressman Luis Gutierrez and Senator Dick Durbin, both of whom have been vocal advocates for the DACA recipients and for immigrants in this country. My great-grandfather arrived in the United States at age 10, penniless as a refugee. My family would have been killed had it remained in our country of origin. And it was a social service agency that gave him a place to live and a public school that gave him a good education and a public university that gave him a university education. And it's the bounty of the people of Illinois. It's by virtue of the bounty of all of you that I'm even here, that my family survived. And we need to stand up for our immigrants, undocumented or otherwise.
Time is up. Thank you. Candidates, one more question in this segment, and it comes from our watchdog partners at the Better Government Association. They'd like to know your plans for reforming the election system to increase voter participation, protect vote integrity, and to level the playing field between incumbents and challengers. This question goes first to Bob Diber.
Well, I think first and foremost what has to happen in the election process is to make sure that all residents have the opportunity and the privilege to register to vote, and we begin to do that by voting on site, okay, and registering on site as you vote. I think that's been a phenomenal step forward in the voting process. We also need to make sure that our voting process is inclusive and that we are not discriminatory in any way by neighborhoods, by where we have voting sites. You know, as we select for early voting, like where an individual can vote, that needs to be mutually exclusive in our communities and in our counties. And that can be a big issue. It can be very political. But I think that's something that's very important to be reviewed. And that's something that I would encourage the election authority to take a close look at.
Daniel Biss.
I was proud to unveil a six-point rewriting the rules plan on election reform. First and foremost, with campaign finance reform, I was able to pass a bill out of the Senate to create a small donor matching system that would be transformational and lifting up the voices of ordinary people and pushing out the voices of big money in our politics. The plan goes beyond that: redistricting reform, ballot access, instant runoff voting, changing the way the Democratic Party chairman of Illinois is chosen. That's a good idea, by the way. And we have to do all of these things. But we also have to back up and say all of the good voting laws in the world won't increase voter participation as much as giving people someone to vote for. Our politics have become ugly, and our politics have given many middle-class families like mine the view that this just isn't for us. This is the game for billionaires. This is a game for millionaires. This is a game for the connected. It's time for us to have a middle-class governor so that ordinary people in Illinois look at their government and say, hey, that's something I should be participating in because that's something that's helping lift me up.
Robert Marshall.
Well, we have a very bad situation in this state, and actually this race here is a good example of it. This office is being purchased. There's a billionaire running, and there's a multi-millionaire who isn't here for some reason or other. They're buying this office. It's time for us to have campaign finance reform. The amount of money that a person could contribute to his own campaign should be limited, number one. Number two, everybody else should be have their campaigns financed publicly to a certain degree, and a matching plan would be a good idea. But right now, is your office up here for governor for sale or not? I don't think it should be for sale. Thank you.
J.B. Pritzker.
Well, the first thing we need to do is to beat Bruce Rauner. Remember that Rauner wrote himself a check for $50 million to start off this entire campaign in December of 2016. And then he took tens of millions of dollars from the Koch brothers' right-wing network, which wants to destroy labor unions in this state. And by the way, I'm going to ban three words from the lexicon of the state of Illinois, and that's right to work. We need to have campaign finance reform in this state, but we'll never get it if Bruce Rauner is still in office. We need to make sure that we have some public matching funds for people who are running, and we got to beat back the voter ID laws that Republicans have been trying to bring to states all across the United States. I funded lawsuits against those voter ID laws, and we won some of those in 2016, but we also lost. We've got to stand up for people's right to vote. People died for your right to vote. People have shed blood. We need to stand up for everyone's right to vote and make sure that we're ensuring equal opportunity to vote in independent
Time
maps, not gerrymandered maps, independent maps for
Thank
the state
you.
Of Illinois.
T.O. Hardeman?
Yes. Sometimes I may come off as, like, really uptight, but I'm really a perfect gentleman. I just want to say that. So this is the reality. We have a governor in Illinois right now that stated that he was not in charge. So you have the wherewithal to run again, to not be in charge for another 4 years. That's totally unacceptable. A lot of people in Illinois, we must have a strong education program put in place to educate people where they can vote, when they can vote. Right now, a lot of ex-offenders do not believe they can vote. We have about 4 million ex-offenders here in Illinois. They need to understand they can. I mean, a lot of them know they can vote. I'm talking about ex-offenders. I'm talking about people that have left prison. I'm talking about in society now. Okay, so the reality is that we have to educate people on a daily basis because a lot of people have become frustrated with politics as usual, status quo politics. That's what's going on right now across the country. First we had Bruce Rauner, now we have Donald Trump. People have given up hope in the system. I'm the only progressive Democrat up here running for office, somebody that's different from everybody else, totally different. You can hear that by the way I talk, right? So this is the thing. That's what I would do just to make sure we educate voters statewide
Time
and make sure they're part of the process.
Candidates, thank you. And again, for anyone joining us late, we should point out again the candidate Chris Kennedy is not here this evening. He sustained a back injury earlier and on doctor's advice did not travel to Springfield for this event. Democratic candidates for governor here with us this evening. The next question comes from Daisy Contreras and we'll go first to Daniel Biss.
Illinois statewide minimum wage is $8.25 per hour, though it is higher in Cook County. Should the state amount stay the same or change, and to what level?
I'm a proud supporter of a $15 minimum wage. I was a co-sponsor of the bill that Bruce Rauner unconscionably vetoed. When I'm governor, I'm going to sign that bill. But I want to explain that that's a start. That's not the end. Let me give you an example. There is a loophole in the minimum wage law in Illinois that allows tipped workers who are servers at restaurants to be paid way less. Who does that affect? Disproportionately women, disproportionately workers of color. That's not right. We've got to close that loophole. We need to wrap around the minimum wage all the other supports required to live a healthy life, from universal access to childcare to family leave, healthcare access, retirement. There are people in this state struggling, people working two and three jobs and trying to figure out how to raise a family. The responsibility of the state government, if we want to have the economy that will work for everyone, is to build a system where every single person working earns a living wage and can have a healthy family life. That's what I'm fighting for.
Robert Marshall.
Well, we all want higher minimum wages. I do, too. $15 would be good. But there's a problem here. $15 for Chicago is meaningful, but $15 down in southern Illinois is difficult. It's a hardship on people and probably not enforceable. I have a plan. Divide the state up into three new states, and then Chicago can enact its own minimum wage, which will be meaningful, enforceable. The suburbs, we can enforce our minimum wage, which will be different. And then down here in southern Illinois, your minimum wage will probably be a lot less, but it'll be meaningful, enforceable. It won't drive people out of business. We're trying to have a one-size-fits-all government for this entire state. It's 19th or 18th century. It's time to think of the 21st century. Divide the state up into three new states.
J.B. Pritzker.
I, too, support a $15 minimum wage in the state. We've got to make sure that people get a living wage, and unfortunately, $15 isn't a living wage anymore. When we started this battle, it may have been, but it isn't. We also need to create jobs. in the state, and I'm the only candidate that's actually created thousands and thousands of jobs in a nonprofit small business incubator and in my own business. I know how to create jobs, and I put forward a plan for job creation across the state with a particular emphasis on central and southern Illinois. We need to make sure that we've got a government that stands up for small businesses, which create two-thirds of all the jobs in our state, that we invest in infrastructure critical for maintaining our status as a supply chain hub of the United States. And we've got to invest in our higher education, our agriculture economy, and don't forget, manufacturing can come back to the state of Illinois. If we invite it back and you've got a governor who's genuinely fighting to bring jobs to the state of Illinois.
T.O. Hardeman.
Yes, I'm the only candidate running for governor that actually worked for minimum wage when I was a teenager myself. So right now, as far as our 2020 plan to move the state of Illinois forward, we support the $15 increase in the minimum wage, but we must think about the small business owners. Once we increase the minimum wage, we must put some measures in place like subsidies and incentives for small business owners, because some of those businesses may end up going out of business. So as a governor, once again, we have to detect these things on the front end and make sure that small businesses are like the backbone of the state as well. So I've traveled the entire state. We have a plan to rebuild East St. Louis, downtown East St. Louis. We have problems in Peoria. We have problems in Decatur. So we have to look at the entire state when we talk about the minimum wage increase to make sure, and the main goal is to make sure that small business owners stay in business. I've met so many mom-and-pop business owners here throughout the state since I've been running for governor the second time now, that it's mandatory as far as our administration to protect everybody in this economy and boost the economy by setting aside $50 million out of the financial transaction tax for capital construction projects. Thank you.
Bob Diver.
Well, the minimum wage, as we sit here today, should be $10 an hour. It's a fair compensation for an entry-level job. And don't be misunderstood by what I said. Minimum wage is not, as been stated, a living wage, but it's often a beginning wage. And we should be preparing young people with skill sets that they don't work in a lifetime for a minimum wage. The reason that it's still $8.25 is because in the minimum wage law standards, there's not a COLA factor. And if you have a COLA factor with your minimum wage, your wage progresses with cost of living increases, and we would be there today where I'm talking. I believe if we worked hard and we unionized most of our work today, we'd have $18 an hour jobs, because that's what we want. We want good paying jobs that have benefits. We don't want substandard wages in this state. And that's, as governor, what I'll fight for, because union training programs produces $18, $20, $25, $30 an hour jobs. That's where we want to go.
Candidates, thank you. Our audience here in Springfield has a great many state workers, and of course, in the rounder years, there has been a sometimes contentious relationship and ongoing contract dispute, and the governor in his most recent budget proposal suggested rolling back some of the health care benefits for state workers and retirees. What would your relationship be with state workers? What would you seek to do for their benefits, and how would you balance that with the interests of taxpayers? And that question goes first to Dr. Marshall.
Well, I might have trouble with state workers. We have a huge problem in this state. That's the pension burden. $120 billion unfunded. In my opinion, they're not unfunded or underfunded. They're over-promised. We've promised way, way too much in these pensions. We have over 100,000 people on the state level with pensions of $50,000 or more. And that, some people have to work all year long at two or three part-time jobs to earn that. So our pensions are overpromised. We need to have some sort of system to renegotiate the whole thing, to dissolve the system and start all over. And my system of dissolving the state and having three new states, you can do that. You can renegotiate all these pensions, and each new state will be more economically viable.
J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. Well, I believe that the pensions that are owed are a moral obligation of the state, and the Supreme Court essentially has ruled exactly that. Now, unlike another candidate on this stage, I don't think that we should take away people's pensions who've had it promised to them. I know that Dan Biss introduced a bill that took away pensions from 450,000 workers across the state, including teachers and nurses. And I don't think that's good for the middle class. I think that we need to stand up when people are offered a job as a teacher, for example, and they're offered a salary, and mostly people are not overpaid who are teachers, that when they're offered that job and they get a pension with it, we have to stand up and live up to the obligation. It's a contract. We've shaken hands with those folks. And it's time for us to step up to the plate and pay what's owed to them.
T.O. Hardiman.
Yes, I'm a former state employee myself, and many years down the road, I receive a pension. I want to make sure my pension's there. And when I become the governor, I receive a pension as well. So this is the thing. I have a great relationship with people that work for the state. I just left a meeting in Waukegan with some AFSCME union workers. I'm a former union employee, so it really baffles me that the unions did not endorse my campaign, because I'm the only person up here that's a former union employee. I believe I am. So I would protect the state workers, and it was brought to my attention also that women that do the same kind of work that men do, and they don't receive the same pay. I plan to change that as far as the state system within the first 90 days of our administration to make sure that we uplift women and they receive the same pay. This is totally unacceptable. So as your governor, I'll take this bull by the horn and make sure we protect the state workers. That's another reason why we must get rid of Bruce Rauner, because he's offered a right-to-work type of issues in our state, and we have to say no to that type of system.
Bob Diver?
I think the questions have been misunderstood. This question is directed to state workers. I don't consider myself being a teacher, a state worker. I think that this is a population of particular people that are doing services for the state of Illinois. So I want to clarify the question. The state workers have not had a contract in a period of time because we've had an administration that doesn't understand collective bargaining and hasn't been willing to bargain with the state workers to settle a contract that gives them a reasonable pay increase with a COLA factor, provide them with benefits that they've negotiated in that contract previously. So, you know, as a governor, you need to be astute to be ready to go to the table to settle a contract dispute that these workers are wanting to settle. And that's what needs to take place.
Senator Biss.
Pensions are a promise. And I've been very open about my record on this issue and what I've learned about it. I was a legislator in early 2011 when there was a huge budget crisis and was trying my best and fell for a false choice about what the right way to solve this problem was. And I've learned that lesson. And that lesson is visible in my voting record for years since that time. As governor, I'm going to pass fair tax policies to fund our pensions and make sure we can guarantee them. But I want to say a word about the breathtaking hypocrisy of J.B. Pritzker. My God. What was he doing? At that same time that I was doing something that I said I've learned a lesson from, he was funding a right-wing organization that was attacking me from the right and trying to do away with pensions altogether. He hasn't said he learned a lesson. He hasn't acknowledged it. He hasn't admitted it. It's pure hypocrisy. It's a failure of leadership.
Excuse me, was there anything in that question about pensions? Not that I heard. I mean, I think these questions ought to be addressed as they're asked. Thank you.
May I have 30? I was referenced by Mr. Pritzker. Can I have 30 seconds to?
No, Mr. Pritzker was called out by name. Real briefly, please.
Thank you. I will be brief. First of all, I made a contribution to an organization 2 years before Dan Biss introduced his pension bill to take away pensions from 450,000 people. And that contribution was intended to go to an organization that was supporting the paying of the pensions. But 2 years later, when he introduced it, he received $15,000 from what he now calls a right-wing organization. So where's the hypocrisy?
We want to keep moving on here.
This is a really important point. He gave money to that organization at the time that they were pushing a bill that I was opposing. They were not trying to fund pensions. No one was saying that. They were pushing a bill that was trying to cut pensions that I was voting against that same month.
You know the problem, the state workers still don't have a contract, and it's got nothing to do with your pensions.
Thank you. We're going to keep moving on here. We want to make sure we get all of our questions in. Bernie Schoenberg will put the next question, starting with J.B. Pritzker.
All right. Mr. Pritzker, what would you do in your first year in office to balance the state's budget, given that if you want a progressive income tax, which I know you've said, that couldn't happen right away because it would take a statewide constitutional amendment? What new taxes or budget cuts would you want to see in that first year?
Well, we do need a progressive income tax in the state, and it's been a central focus of my campaign, very important for us. But in those first 2 years, before we could actually enact it, we could do what other states have done, which is to implement exemptions for the middle class and those striving to get to the middle class so that they would have a lower rate, and increase the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit, while increasing the overall rate, which would effectively give us, like Massachusetts, a progressive income tax for a temporary period. I believe you've got to solve this with a constitutional amendment. That's why it's so important that you've got a candidate who's running on it, so we can actually elect people to public office who believe in it. It's important. All the states around us, save Indiana, have a progressive income tax, and most states in the United States that have an income tax have a progressive income tax. It's critically important. I also would legalize marijuana and tax it, which would bring in $350 to $700 million new dollars.
And can you say how high that higher rate should be the first year?
I think it's something you've got to negotiate with the legislature, and frankly, it's something you'd have to make transparent to the people of Illinois as you're trying to pass a constitutional amendment.
T.O. Hardiman?
Yeah, the first thing we would do as far as the Hardeman and Avery administration, we have to see we're spending $25 million a day on the pension, and it's about $9 billion a year. There's a way to catch up with those payments first and foremost. Pushing forward, once again, House Bill 453, for those who don't know, is the financial transaction tax. That's number one. Legalize small amounts of recreational uses, marijuana. That's number two. That can bring in a projected close to probably $2 billion along with the $3 billion from the financial transaction tax until we make sure that we have a constitutional amendment for the progressive tax, and that would bring a projected $3 billion. So combined, that would be $9 billion. We can use that new revenue to offset some of the pension crisis, our yearly payments anyway, to get back on track, and then we can balance the budget at the same time. So that's what we would do in the first year, take a look at that, because there's no system playing with the people. It's going to take 2 years, and we have to make sure that everybody's in agreement with opening up the Constitution for an amendment for the progressive tax. It's good to talk about it, but you must be able to work across aisles to make sure that's a reality in Illinois. So as your governor, I would push that forward to the best of our ability.
Bob Diver.
Well, I haven't only said that I promote a progressive income tax. I'm the candidate that laid out the model that actually put numbers to it. If you're not willing to put numbers to it, there's nothing really to discuss but a concept. So I encourage you to look at my model. Whether you agree with it or not, it's fine. It's a model of discussion. It's a starting point. It's how you begin any policy that changes taxation. And we need to move to that. But to get there, first and foremost, what has to happen is we have to pay our bills. And these bills, you have one or two choices. You can do my plan, and that's bond the bills out, reinvest, look at amortizing your debt, put it in your budget, and have a balanced budget your first year as governor. That's what I will do. Secondly, I will eliminate duplicate services. You know, I said we did not need a Secretary of Education, the highest paid appointee of Governor Rauner, so she resigned. And they've not appointed anybody, so I must have been right. And I will make recommendations like that going forward as to positions that we can eliminate to save taxpayers' money.
Thank you. Daniel Biss.
I do think a progressive income tax is the first priority. The original sin in Illinois budgeting is that unfair flat tax provision in our Constitution. That's why I've been fighting to change it throughout my career since I first ran for office a decade ago. The reason we don't have it is that wealthy people in the state have too much power and they've stopped it. J.B. Pritzker spent $56 million on his campaign so far. If he'd spent $56 million helping us pass the progressive income tax, we wouldn't be having this budget crisis right now. But in the meantime, to get there, the reason we need a progressive income tax is because we need a tax code that matches the modern economy, that taxes the wealthy where the money is today so we can have a government that works for modern society, and there are other things that can be done there. I support taxing financial transactions at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. That raises significant money and does not require a constitutional amendment. I passed legislation out of the Illinois Senate to close the corrupt Bruce Rauner carried interest tax loophole that allows some of the richest people in the history of the world to reclassify their income and get a tax cut of almost 20%. If we close that loophole, that brings in serious revenue for the state of Illinois.
And finally, Robert Marshall.
Finally. Well, I've answered your question. I've answered new sources of income, marijuana, casino gambling for Chicago, and tolls on the entrances to the state. 15 entrances to the state, put tolls there, have the out-of-staters pay. Now this graduated income tax thing. This is going to be it's a disaster, a biggest mistake. People are leaving the state because the taxes are too high. And now a graduated income tax will target these people. They'll leave the state in greater numbers. This will take money out of the local economy and send it to Springfield.
the graduated tax bill. And who's in Springfield to receive this money? Mike Madigan. Do you want that? Not me. Look on my website, citizensforrobertmarshall.net. There are 12 reasons why we should not have a graduated income tax. Taxes are too high in this state. That's why people are leaving. And we've got to stop people from leaving the state.
Our next question will be posed by Daisy Contreras, and we'll go first to T.O. Hardiman.
Mr. Hardiman, because of action in Washington, there will no longer be a penalty if individuals do not buy health insurance, and more changes in the Federal Affordable Care Act could be coming. What role should the state play in helping people get health care coverage?
Well, you know, we support single-payer health care without a doubt here in Illinois. It's very important, but we must be honest with the people in Illinois as well. It's going to take an astronomical amount of money to back that up. So, you know, you only have like two countries that I know about, Singapore and Switzerland, that actually have universal health care. So we would have to work strictly with the federal government to see what more can be done to make sure that we have single-payer health care in Illinois. Right now, we have close to 900,000 people uninsured in Illinois, and we have 1.7 million people living in poverty here. So as the governor, I plan to really take a good look at ways that we can brainstorm together and bring all the experts to the table to make that a reality for people in Illinois. In Washington, if they're saying they're not going to penalize, ask me the latter part of the question again. You say they're not going to penalize people. So if they're not going to penalize people, that means that they want people out here that are not insured. And we have to make sure that people are insured, because it makes a person feel good when they go to the hospital and they have insurance to pay for whatever's happening with them. We don't want to leave nobody behind in that particular situation, and I plan to make that a priority of our administration.
Bob Diver?
Well, the whole premise of the Affordable Health Care Act is that some residents cannot afford to buy health insurance because of the premium rate. And I'm about providing health care services, and I've demonstrated some models of that as an elected official. And I'm for expanding community care programs through a program that I call iCare. And this program will be coordinated with university systems throughout the state. Right here on this campus, I will tell you, if you were ill today, you could go to the health service and you could see a doctor, you could get a prescription, and you could be treated. If we can do that on this campus, and we can do it at our major campuses in the United States, we can do it in every community, and we can provide affordable health care for our residents and reduce what we're spending on Medicaid. We're never going to be able to provide every Illinois resident with a health care policy that they can take to any HMO or PPO and get covered by it, because they're going to be denied. But we can't provide them with health care and the humanity they deserve in this state.
Daniel Biz.
I first joined the legislature after the 2010 election when I was elected to the House. I ran for that office because I thought it was the right way for me to serve and give back to my community. I thought it was the best thing that I could do to contribute. But the decision to run didn't hinge only on that and on what Karen, my wife, thought. It also hinged on a really complicated conversation we had about whether our now 9-year-old, then 1-year-old Elliot would have access to health care while I was running. And because we were among the lucky ones, because of Medicaid, I was able to run, and Elliot had access to health care, and now I sit before you as a candidate for governor and a state senator. That's the story of so many Illinois families, and anyone who's gone through that knows that we need universal health care. That's why I'm the only candidate in this race fighting for universal single-payer health care. Health care should be a right and not an option, a right and not a privilege, and that's why I'm endorsed by the National Nurses United, a fierce national labor union fighting for universal single-payer health care.
Dr. Marshall?
I've been making very few changes in our medical system. The only thing I've been campaigning for several years is decreasing the Medicare age down slightly. I would decrease it down to age 64, and that's about the only change I would make. I'm against a universal health care system for this state or this country. It'll cause a massive increase in federal taxes, because look what you're doing. You're replacing an entire private system where 60% of our people get health insurance. You're replacing that with a Medicare or a government program, and it's going to cost an enormous amount of money, enormous increase in federal taxes. And everybody says, oh, it'll be Medicare for everybody. There's another alternative here. Maybe it'll be VA care, VA health care for everybody. Are you familiar with that? It has a lot to be desired. You have to wait forever. I know many people who just got tired of waiting and then went to the private system to get real health care. That won't exist. if you have a universal health care system.
J.B. Pritzker.
Well, I believe that health care is a right, not a privilege, and we need universal health care in the state of Illinois and, frankly, nationally. Now, there are some who advocate a single state, single payer, and that might work, but they admit that it'll take years to implement. I put forward a plan that we could begin putting forward and covering people right away called Illinois Cares. And what it is it's actually President Obama's idea. It's the public option. The idea that everybody should be able to access the state's health insurance plan. And it's much cheaper for middle-class taxpayers, for middle-class people and those striving to get to the middle class. It's cheaper than a private health insurance plan by thousands of dollars, which can be put back on the kitchen table, back in your own pockets. Now, Illinois Cares is something that we can do right away, and it gives everybody the opportunity, including small businesses, to offer health insurance to their employees. With Donald Trump trying to take away a million people's health care, this is the first and best option for us.
Candidates, one final question. A major education funding reform plan was signed into law this past year. What are the good points of this legislation? What still needs to be modified? And in particular, would you keep the tax credits for private school scholarship donations? This question goes first to Bob Diver.
Well, thank you. We still haven't been able to make one payment to any school district in the entire state of Illinois by this funding formula, which is called an evidence-based funding model. Not one payment today. I know this because I receive them. And so do my districts. So that needs to be corrected. What's good about it is it does provide some equalization of funding to poverty districts that don't have the essential wealth of EAV. To find the $6 billion to actually fund this is going to be a steep hill to climb because that's the amount of additional revenue to fully fund the evidence-based funding model. Now, what I've recommended that needs to be done to this is that it was a good starting point, but the bill, without any question, needs to be amended. And one of the amendments is we need to remove the $75 million of tuition tax credits from it. I oppose that because we can't fund private institutions when we can't pay our public ones. So we need to move forward with this and look for amendments.
Senator Biss.
This question is personal for me. I'm the only candidate in the race for governor with kids in public schools, and I've been a lifelong fighter for fair school funding. I voted against that bill, and my running mate, Letisa Wallace, who's a state representative, voted against that bill as well because of that school voucher program, $75 million out of the public treasury to further enrich the wealthy and prop up the private school system. So first of all, as governor, I'll fight to repeal that. But second of all, the good parts of the bill still leave most of the work left to be done. The fundamental problem in this state is that we are way too reliant on property taxes to fund our schools, and therefore we have schools that are wonderfully funded in some places and schools without anything close to adequate funding elsewhere. We deserve high-quality neighborhood public schools in every single zip code of Illinois. To do that, you need a fair tax system. You need to ask the wealthy to pay their share, use that money to fund schools properly across the state from the state treasury, bring property taxes down significantly. That's what I've been fighting for throughout my career. That's what I'm going to do as governor. It sounds ambitious, but states across the Midwest get this done, and so will we.
Robert Marshall.
Well, this bill bails out Chicago schools. Over $200 million of your money going up there. How much longer are you going to put up with that? Aren't you tired of bailing out Chicago? The private tax credit, I'm for that. I'm the only one up here for that, I think. It actually increases the total amount of money going to education. It increases competition between the private and public sectors. And competition is good. And anytime you talk about education or public school funding, you got to talk about pensions. We're financing two governments, every place in this state, two state governments, two school systems, one working, one not working. That's why you don't have any money left for the people who are working. You're spending too much on pensions. So those are the three points that I want to make here. And thank you for the question.
Thank you. J.B. Pritzker.
Well, on private tax credits, Rauner chose to take money away from public schools by putting in those private tax credits. So did Dan Biss, by the way, vote to take money away from neighborhood public schools and give it to charter schools. That's not good for for the middle class. Now, your slogan just doesn't match your record. When I'm governor, Juliana Stratton and I, and Juliana voted against that private tax credit bill, Juliana Stratton and I are going to repeal that $75 million private tax credit. We're not going to be beholden to Betsy DeVos. We're going to stand up for public schools and make sure that every child gets a quality education in this state.
T.O. Hardeman.
Yes, when it comes down, I'm totally against the tax credit, and I believe in placing a moratorium on the expansion of charter schools and private schools. What Governor Rauner has done, basically he's looking out for a lot of his friends and cronies throughout the state. That's why we need to make sure that we get Governor Rauner out of that office. But and I support public schools all the way, and I want to say this as well, because a lot of times we focus on Chicago public schools, but we have to fund schools throughout the entire state. And I plan to set aside enough funds to fund the schools year after year to make sure. And what's really tragic is in Chicago, I must say this, young people that attend Chicago public schools every year, it's like a nightmare. They don't even know if the schools are going to open on time because they're being played with it like a political football. And we have to bring an end to all this kind of mess. And it's, that's why we need term limits, and we have to get the right people in a position as governor that has nothing to do with status quo politics, somebody that has nothing to do with business as usual in the state of Illinois. That's why I'm making this appeal to the 35% of the undecided voters here in Illinois right now.
And unfortunately, we are out of time here. We have to go now to closing statements in order to be able to finish on time, so you'll have your chance to make your final comments here at this time. We will stay with the order that we had our opening statements in. So the first 60-second closing statement will go to J.B. Pritzker.
Thank you. You know, I spoke at the outset tonight about getting big things done, and I've tried to do that through the course of my life. There are 230,000 kids across the state of Illinois in low-income school districts who get school breakfast because of the work that I've done, and thousands of kids who get quality preschool and quality child care because for more than 20 years I've been a national advocate for them. And I've created thousands and thousands of jobs here in Illinois. I ran the Illinois Human Rights Commission and turned it around with Republicans and Democrats. So all of those things, how did I get those things done? Frankly, the same methodology from one to another. And that is, you get the right people in the room, the nonprofit leaders, elected leaders, ordinary Illinoisans who care deeply about these issues, and you work together with them. Provide the vision and the leadership and work together. We've had too little of that in Springfield, and I promise you, as governor, I'm going to bring that and work together with all of our elected officials to pass a great state budget and get real
Time
things
is up.
Done.
Final 60-second closing statement from T.O. Hardeman.
Yes, I would like to be the governor here in the state of Illinois that's going to represent the 99.9% of the poor people, working class and middle class people. We have a 2020 plan which represents a perfect vision to move the state forward. I'm grateful to be running with my running mate, Patricia Avery, who has over 30 years' experience in leadership positions. Our plan includes the veterans, the senior citizens, the children, people with disabilities, college students, you name it, we're there. We want to support the state with the progressive tax, House Bill 453, once again, reduce gun violence statewide by 50%. I'm the only candidate running for governor right now. I have not spent a fraction of money that everybody else has spent, and we're 18% in the polls right now. The media will not put that out there, but we're 18% in the polls. I won close to 28.1% of the state vote when I ran in 2014. I know a lot of people have name recognition throughout the state, but most important, we get the job done. Our campaign is powered by the people. Your voice is our mission, and our campaign represents a new way forward for the people in Illinois. I'm asking everybody in the audience to think out of the box.
Time is
support
up.
T.O. Hardeman and Patricia Avery for governor and lieutenant governor.
Bob Diver.
Thank you. Well, when my wife, Karen, who is here in the audience tonight, and I decided that I would pursue this race, our two sons are attending a public university in the state of Illinois, and we had tuition to pay, and we had decisions to make. But we knew we had to enter this race because we have to change Illinois. We've got to have a different view, and we have to have different leadership in Springfield if this state is going to change. What you've heard tonight, bickering back and forth, does not get the job done. What gets the job done is true leadership. Someone who's been a leader in labor, someone who's paid union dues, someone who has worked as a teacher that understands education, that served 20 years in local government, that knows how it works, that's what gets things done in this state. I haven't developed millions of jobs, but I've produced thousands of state workers.
Daniel Biss.
Thank you. What you saw tonight was the billionaire playbook. Desperate attacks, misrepresentations of my record. It's what they do when they're scared. It's what they do when they're scared of what a middle-class governor will do, asking the wealthy to pay their share to fund our schools and health care for all. I'm running on my record, 7 years in the legislature, passing progressive laws, making tough choices. And we know why J.B. Pritzker's here. Because he's a billionaire, willing to spend $56 million so far on this campaign. And it wasn't supposed to turn out the way it's turning out. The middle-class candidate wasn't supposed to have a chance. But because people across the state of Illinois are sick of a system that is not on our side and are hungry for a middle-class progressive governor, something is changing in this state. And there's an incredible opportunity for us to transform our state and take it back for the rest of us. I'm Daniel Biss. I'm running for governor, and I'm asking you to join our movement.
And finally, Robert Marshall.
How appropriate to end with me. If you're satisfied with the establishment in this state, don't vote for me. There are four candidates. If you exclude Mr. Hardeman, all the other candidates are like that with Madigan and the establishment, and I'm not. Some of these people I don't even know. If you want... well, we have a big problem in this state. You have a small number of people representing 20% of the state, Chicago, bossing around the rest of the state, 80%. How much longer are you going to put up with that? I say, let's break away. Break away from the state of Illinois. Form your own state down here. Everything south of Route 80, that'll be yours. You won't be bailing out Chicago. You won't be associated with those murders up there, 4,000 shootings. We will have our own government up in the suburbs, and we'll do our thing up there, and we'll be independent, and we'll be free. Thank you.
Candidates, we want to thank you all very much for being here. Audience, let's give them all a big round of applause.